Okay, welcome to Greek Club.
Hetaireia Hellenes. We are. I had to look that up because Tim had this. Had the Hebrew Club, you know. And is that modern Hebrew, Tim?
Yeah.
Right, so I looked it up in this book that I can't afford. But Bell's has a copy where you can look up English words in Greek. I can't remember what the book is called. We are reading in Matthew chapter 3, and I believe we are at verse 13. So we finished the sort of the summary description of the baptizer's ministry and of his preaching, which, as we saw last time, was very eschatological. And then the narrative shifts to the account of the baptism of Christ, which is, of course, a wonderful thing narratively and theologically, but we'll try to focus on the language, starting in verse 13. So Matthew writes, Tate paragenetai ha Jesus apates galalaias epitan Jordanein prostan Ioannein tu baptistenai hip autu. This is not a bad example of how of the default mode of a prepositional phrase is sort of by default adverbial unless otherwise notified. So we have a historical present from paragenomai, just the present indicative middle deponent, third singular. And you normally just translate these as a simple past. Then Jesus appeared from Galilee. From Galilee modifies appeared, tells whence Jesus. And then epi ton Jordanein tells, on the one hand, the location to which he came. And then prostan Ioannein tells the person to whom he came. And all of them modify the verb paragenetai. So this is typical construction. The English illustration of why this is bad English that you may have heard goes like this. Abraham Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address while riding on a train on the back of an envelope. See, now in English, you've got to put the prepositional phrase on the back of an envelope. You've got to put it closer to where it needs to be. But Greek doesn't have to do that. And so, again, sometimes you'll have an article on a prepositional phrase. Sometimes just word order will lead you to taking it adjectivally. But again, default mode for prepositional phrases in Greek is they're adverbs, right? And the great illustration of this is to be able to say that the gospel is in the adverbs. So we hold that a man is justified, well, with the wrong adverbs, it's not the gospel anymore, by works of the law. See, that's ek, that'd be an ek prepositional phrase. It's an adverb. So you get the right adverbs, you got the gospel. You get the wrong adverbs, you don't have the gospel. So, and you're thinking, what a complete geek. You don't need the two. You don't need the article on the infinitive baptistenai to express purpose, but sometimes it's just there. I don't know of a way other to explain it than that. But the aorist passive infinitive it does express purpose. Jesus, and again, it's the purpose of the main verb, right? So Jesus appears in order to be baptized by him, and of course the him is John. So, it's not a hard sentence, but some nice illustration of some basic Greek stuff. Any thoughts or comments? Or yeah, Tim?
Well, historical presence, are those things purely kind of stylistic, unique to different writers more frequently used? Do they occur more frequently after particles like talk that, stuff like that?
The question is, when do historical presence occur? I don't have a sophisticated answer. I tend to think they're more a stylistic feature. John has them all over the place. Mark has a lot. Now, Jim, has a fairly sophisticated analysis of how this happens in Mark. Matthew doesn't use them very often at all. Interestingly, there are two texts. We'll actually see one in maybe today. The two texts where there's a bunch of historical presence focused are the temptation in the wilderness and the temptation in the garden, which I find somewhat significant. If it adds, rhetorically, it apparently adds a kind of a touch of vividness or presence to the narrative. But to be honest, no, it doesn't. Yeah, I'm kind of loath to make too much of that. Yeah. So, yeah, good question. Other questions? Okay, verse 14. hadaiwanes dieko luen auton legon ego crayon echo hipasu baptistenai kai su erke pros me? Question mark? De, as you know, is flexible in this context. It'd probably be best to translate it but. But John, now we have a great example of what's called in the grammars a conative imperfect. It's from a Latin word that I don't know, and it means to try or attempt. Okay? And so it's just an imperfect indicative active third singular from diakoluo, but it's always translated, John tried to hinder him. And it's because in context, he didn't. I mean, he tried to, but it didn't work. The only reason you translate it that way is because of the context. And so John tried to hinder him as he was saying, or perhaps by saying. Note the emphatic pronouns. Neither one needs to be there, but it really enhances the contrast. I have a need. And now let's describe need. In grammatical categories, certain nouns sort of invite an infinitive to explain them. And the grammars call this the epexegetical infinitive or the explanatory infinitive. So need in what regard? Need to be baptized by you. So in that sense, the infinitive here is sort of explicating what the need is. All right? It's kind of like authority is the same way. Authority to do something. Right? So certain nouns just lexically want to have an infinitive that follows after to explain more about them. And that's what's going on here. So I have a need by you to be baptized, and you are coming to me? Big question. Two emphatic pronouns. So just, you can't kind of pass by this completely theologically. I mean, John actually knows who Jesus is. He's the Mighty One, right? He's just proclaimed who he is. And John also knows what his baptism is for. It's for sinners. So John is feeling in a very intense way this tension between what he knows to be true about Jesus and what Jesus is now asking of him. And of course, you can preach this a lot, but we won't go into that right now. So, question on verse 14. Yeah, Mike and then Mark. Go ahead.
You know what, dude, when John's followers come to Jesus later on and say, are you really the one that's
Yeah, well, Mike asks about the question later, and it's not just from John's followers, but the question is from John.
Right.
Yeah. Are you the coming one? Right. I think the Sue is there, and I think it's a genuine question. Again, it's the tension between the already and the not yet, if you will. So, yeah, Mark.
In light of that, is John speaking prophetically here? Do you know that? Or is it more
So how much and how does John know about Jesus?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. The narrative doesn't tell us. Yeah. Right.
Nothing in the Greek that tells you.
Nope. Nothing that I can see anyway. Maybe it's in a variant reading. That was a little Chloe joke there. So, good. Okay. Moving on to verse 15. This is kind of a Semitic, I guess, way of speaking and answering. He said, apokrithes is the aorist participle passive of the deponent verb apokrinomai. You don't need it. It's really, the fancy word for this. The fancy word for this is pleonastic, which is a great term because it is in itself unnecessary, right? So, so pleonazo is I'm very happy to point out, comes from a Greek word. It means to increase, right? So you don't need to have this. So you can just drop it out. But it's a kind of a Semitic expression, apparently, and. Just like you get these legones trailing on. It's like lay more, saying, right? So anyway, and answering, Jesus said to him, that is to John, Aphes arte, houtos gar preponesten, amin, plerosai, pasan dikaiosine, tate aphesin auton. So, and answering, Jesus said to him, allow or permit now. Aphes is one of these verbs you just kind of have to pray over, or if you have a computer program, you can point and click, right? It's from aphe'eme, which can mean to forgive, it can mean to permit, it can mean to allow, all kinds of things. Here it probably means to allow, and it's an aorist imperative active second singular, and I only know that because I regularly teach elementary Greek. So permit now, for in this way, houtos, this is how it's going to happen. And what's the it's going to happen? Now, prepon esten, it is fitting. Okay, prepon is actually a participle from prepo. So it is fitting. Now, what's the it? And grammatically, it's the infinitive and everything that goes with it. The it is to fulfill all righteousness. So if you wanted to give a kind of a strictly grammatical wooden translation, you would say something like this. For in this way, for us to fulfill all righteousness, no. For in this way, to fulfill all righteousness is fitting for us. Something like that. This is called the subject use of the infinitive. It generally happens with, well, you see it most often with the little word de, delta, epsilon, iota, which is normally translated, it is necessary. Well, the it in it is necessary is almost always an infinitive construction. Sometimes it's a hina clause, which just shows that hina is sort of kind of encroaching into the domain of the simple infinitive, so to speak. It's doing things that infinitives normally do. So so plerosai and its object to fulfill all righteousness is the subject of estin prepon. And then the verse ends with another historical present, by the way. Here's a down and dirty clue for the forms of afi'eme. If you think it's from afi'eme and you see the iota still in the stem, then you know it's a first principal part form. Now, you may not know what it is, but you know it comes from the first principal part. This is just a present indicative active third singular. Then he, again, literally permits. So it's another historical present. Now, every single word of this of Jesus' answer is theologically loaded, which is why we're going to skip all of it, and we're going to go on and read more grammar. Yeah, you know, as I... You're already sick of me saying, if you want to know what I think, you can go read it in this large blue book, right?
Can I ask you a question about the apparatus?
Yeah, go ahead.
What do you make of the, at the end of the verse there, the baptist, they not down in the apparatus, that means, I don't know what this is, Mark.
Yeah, the
or was it
two manuscripts of the Syriac tradition, right? Well, it's probably just a natural...
I just see it mirrors the other one up in the...
Exactly.
The verse there, if the writer, maybe, or
right.
Transcriber, or whatever.
Right. Well, actually, this would be a good chance to illustrate the one great... Who can tell me the one great rule of textual criticism? The reading is to be preferred, which does what?
It's the other one's...
Explains
one's
the rise of the other reading, or readings. Right. And so here, you would look for, gee, is there a way to explain that there was originally a longer reading and the word was omitted? Or does it seem more natural to say, well, gee, originally the reading was shorter and Baptist Thanae was added? Right. And at least, just off the top of my head, the latter explanation seems more likely, just as you said, Frank, of an echo of the infinitive that preceded it. Right, right. But again, a lot of these things are judgment calls, and it can be difficult sometimes to decide. So it's also a good illustration, by the way, of how a variant reading doesn't actually change the meaning of the text. because you know that even if it's not there, it doesn't mean then he permitted him to go to Hardee's. I mean, you know what it means, which is why it's probably just a natural addition, you know, to the text. So, yeah. And you know what? See, so often meaning doesn't reside so much in individual words as in groups of words, and as Dr. Bells points out in his hermeneutics book, language in general is shorthand. See? And a lot of times it's effortless. You just supply the stuff you need, even when it's a weird language like Greek or Hebrew, you know. Of course, sometimes there are more difficult decisions, but that's actually, I think, a good illustration of that. So, okay, all right. Let's press on then, verse 16. Baptistes deha Jesus euthus. Are we in Mark? An ebe apa tu hidatas kai edu. Ene ochthesan auto hoi uranoi kai aiden maybe ta pneuma maybe tu theu katabainan hose peristeran kai erchamenon ep auton. So a long sentence. Aorist participle passive in predicate position. Take it temporally. After Jesus had been baptized, Jesus immediately, on ebe is from anabino, very irregular third principal part. This is just the aorist indicative active third singular, from anabino. He went up from the water, and now we get two idu statements. Matthew likes to mark things with idu. And looky here, the heavens, this is the verb here is from an oigo, which means I open. It's a little strong, that is to say irregular, but you can spot the face on, right? So you think, oh, this is aorist indicative passive third plural, and that would be right. The heavens were opened, and if we read auto, then they were opened to him, and he, singular, he saw. Now we have a difficult decision on whether to have the articles on pneuma and theou. I don't think it changes the meaning much one way or the other. What's interesting is the participles that follow. Without the articles, they could be attributive position, but let's go ahead and read the articles. So now the options are something like this. He saw the Spirit while he, or I suppose it, was coming down. He saw that the Spirit was coming down. That would be the participle of indirect discourse, which we've seen, I think, once or twice before. Or maybe just a supplementary participle, where even though it's predicate position, it's just kind of part of the object of the verb. And it's just a purely contextual decision. If possible, find the easiest answer. And of course you're thinking, how the heck will I know what the easiest answer is? And the answer is read Greek for 25 years and then, you know, right. Which we're all going to, everybody raise their hand, you're going to read Greek the rest of your life, all God's people said.
Amen.
Thank you. And Hebrew 2, and all God's people said.
Amen.
That's right. So we'll take it that latter way, supplementary. And he saw the Spirit of God coming down like a dove and, or descending like a dove and coming upon him. Notice that, for whatever reason, Matthew reports that Jesus saw this. He doesn't say anything about the Baptist seeing it. He doesn't say anything about the crowd seeing it. Okay? So if you're going to preach this text, you probably wouldn't emphasize the amazement of the crowds. Because they're not there. Right? Verse 17. Oh, no, question on 16. Yeah, Ben.
Real quick on oigo. Isn't that ana plus oigo?
Yes, it is, actually.
So how do you explain the eta on the front of that? It's like a double...
Oh, that's a good question. A double augment.
Yeah, augmenting the stem and then also the preposition.
It's a good morphological question that I don't think I can answer.
You almost have a triple because you have a length and oi goes to omega with your subscript.
Right.
Then you have an epsilon in front of that.
Right.
And then the alpha goes to an eta. So is it really, really aorist?
No, Ben, I think it's just aorist. Yeah. But that's a good question. I will try to look that up for next week. The question is, on oigo just means I open. This is on oigo.
Oh, yeah.
So why wouldn't the augment be between the new and the basic stem of the verb? Like on a bino? Yeah, that's a good question. I can't answer it. It's due to the historical developments of the Greek language. Yeah, it could just be a morphological peculiarity, which is another way of saying I don't know. All right, and then we have verse 17. Oh, any other questions about 16? Okay, verse 17. Kayadu, and again, look. Phone ek ton uranon legusa. Now, legusa, the phone is the referent of the participle legusa. It's feminine singular nominative. You probably could just as easily supply a verb, there was. And there was a voice from heaven which was saying. So you could take the participle as attributive position, even though there's no article anywhere. That would just be purely a contextual decision. And then we have the Matthew's report of the voice. Hutas estin ha huiasmu ha agapetas en ho eodokesa. This person, the near demonstrative pronoun, nominative case, subject, this person is my son, the beloved one, my beloved son, in whom, and now we have an aorist indicative that puzzles people. Why is it not a perfect indicative? Why is it not a present indicative? Literally, in whom I was pleased. So, what do the Greek grammarians do? They make up a category, right? So this is called a nomic aorist, or a timeless aorist, or something like that. But really, it's a very puzzling aorist indicative. You might expect, in whom I am well pleased, or in whom I have been and still am. I suppose you could just say that the Father is indicating a past attitude or something, but it's a little puzzling. So, yeah, go ahead, Will.
I'm under the understanding that, like, the aorist doesn't limit it. Like, it could mean, you know, I was pleased, but that doesn't mean to say that he's not continually pleased. It's just giving you one little a snapshot. It's not telling you the whole story.
That is correct.
The tenses, right?
The aorist is kind of agnostic on whether or not the Father is still pleased.
Right,
so to speak. Did that sound bad? That did sound bad, yeah. But grammatically, that's exactly right. There's just no information there, which is why it puzzles people. Given the fact that the Spirit is just, I mean, this is kind of the indication of the Father's pleasure, right? But that's what it says, so.
Are there other examples of this?
A few, yeah. Well, in fact, the Transfiguration is the same thing. Yeah, there are a few examples of these puzzling aorist indicatives where it just sort of doesn't seem to fit. So, yeah.
Do you know whether they tend to be stated or something like that? If it's a habit of Greek to describe states, present states with errors.
I'm not sure there's enough of them to see a pattern, Tim. Yeah, that's another good question, though. The question is whether or not these odd aorists are used with stated verbs, like eodokeo, to be pleased. Right. Right. So. Okay, we'll get one more verse just to get into chapter 4. Go ahead, Mike.
The variation in the glucose standard.
Yes?
Why would that lead you to believe in the grammar that more than just Jesus heard the voice? Because he saw the dove of this enemy, and now it's this person.
I know.
You are.
Right, right, yeah. To whom is the voice speaking? Well, it's speaking to someone other than Jesus. Right, right, right. Good question. Lots has been written about that. None of it grammatical. I know. That's right. That's right. Let's do verse 1 of chapter 4. Then we'll stop. Tata ha Jesus an eikthe eiste eremon hippatu pneumatas perastena hippatu diabolu. Then Jesus was led up from on ago. And there, by the way, you see the augment, you know, in the middle, Ben, which is what you were asking about. Then Jesus was led up into the desert by the Spirit. So the Spirit led him up. There's kind of an interesting double agency construction here. The Spirit led him up for this purpose, to be somethinged by the devil. Well, the agency of peirasthenai is the devil. So you don't translate it tested. You translate it tempted. Okay? So it's the Spirit's idea to put Jesus in harm's way. Oh, that's interesting. And that's not a bad place to stop. Since it's 12:27 or something like that. With your Nestle Allende or on it. Greek club.